David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 413. I'm your host, Steve Raker, down in the comic book bunker, and connected with my pals, Andrew the LA Rabbit and WWX Kevin from this relay station I've got, like they're heroes for hire, waiting for the go signal. Marvel Noise is the podcast hosted by nobody, with the scope being all things Marvel. We're affiliated with the Deliberate Noise Network, like it's a secret empire, and our number one is Derek Coward. He also helps distribute and hosts our show, not like host like, hey, I'm your host, but hosts like he'll put out our show for us, Indie Comic Book Noise, where we talk about the indie comic books we're digging on. And you can find episodes of Marvel Noise, past and present, over on MarvelNoise.com. And you can issue us cries for help and see cover galleries and get new episode announcements on our Facebook and Twitter pages. Now, this episode, the New Warriors saga, reaches its conclusion. Or does it? We've got the finale of the first New Warriors series that ended with issue 75. And it'll be our 23rd segment covering that comic.
Wow.
Steve, right? It's Marvel. Comics never end. The story continues.
That's what I love about it, though, right? Yeah. Love these fictional histories. But first, before we do that, I mean, we'd never make you listen to multiple episodes in a row with all these 90 comics without providing, you know, some other content. So let's fire off some recent reads.
Oh, before that, I have a recent watch.
Ooh, that counts.
Yes, I returned to the theater. I think it was a perfect time to do it for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Nice. I saw it in the drive-in.
My money was on John Wick 4, but anyways.
So what'd you think?
I had a really, really good time. I mean, it was an emotional roller coaster. And my brain does that thing at the beginning of every movie where it's trying to piece things together or trying to figure out, does this work? And then you sort of settle into the movie. I mean, ideally, you settle into the movie, right?
Right.
Like, if it's a bad movie or there's some weird continuity thing that keeps on poking a stick in your eye, like, it's hard to relax. But that wasn't really a problem. I always liked about the Guardians of the Galaxy, every character seems to be arcing, like there's arcs, there's stories going on.
Yes.
So it's always like pushing forward and like cool things are happening.
For sure. I mean, I was gonna have a good time no matter what, because I was sitting out, you know, like on a camp chair on the lawn. We always get there early so we can get right up in the front row. So we've just got a field ahead of us with the screen, right? So we're just sitting there snacking and drinking and sitting in a camp chair with a blanket on because it's, you know, May. So it's still chilly at night by the time it gets dark and the stars are out and, you know, licking an ice cream cone and watching a movie, it could have been terrible and I would have had a good time. But like you said, I settled into it. It drew me in and then I was really just enjoying myself. I've heard some criticisms that I think are founded from some friends that they were just so angry at each other the whole movie, but
really?
That was kind of their take on kind of how family interacts and what a weird motley crew this bunch is thrown together. And I thought it really played off the characterizations pretty well and seemed like a good third installment kind of wrap up of the series.
Yeah, I know there's been some discussion over the last few years that, oh, the movies weren't as good, even though they started to have like that base level of quality. So I mean, I don't feel like all of those movies were like the same quality, but I definitely feel like this one is definitely at like a higher level. Like it would definitely, I don't like, it's way too early for me to think about ranking, but this would definitely go above a lot of movies, I can tell already. Like everything comes together in a satisfying way, and I'm just like, man, I'm really enjoying this movie.
I think people are getting spoiled by the common universe thing and thinking that everything has to be so linked, like they gave it to us hot and heavy, you know, in the, even calling these movies phases and waves and all that sort of stuff makes it seem like it's all part of the same thing. And everyone's complaint is, oh, this all seems so fractured. It's like, well, because these are all different movies. Like, I really feel like that last Doctor Strange movie was a fun ride. That last Spider-Man movie was a fun ride. It's like, I'm not sure that Marvel movies suck now. I think that there's been some pretty darn good ones lately. Some ones that I enjoy that don't have to service origins and don't have to be the biggest thing that's connecting everything and just be fun little rides like a new issue.
Like, I just find it weird. Like, something happens in Eternals or whatever, and it's like, oh, the next movie didn't reference that. I'm like, yeah, if Spider-Man's just in New York going about his business, like, he's not going to reference all the other movies. Like, he's off doing his thing. Like, that's how Marvel Comics read and work, don't they?
Yep. Just go and read. And you got to see Eternals number 2 if you want to, you know what I mean? Like, see the next part of that story.
It's almost like that, isn't it? And it's like, well, why didn't he just call the Fantastic Four or whatever? It's like, no, because you want him to solve his own stories in his own book.
That's why you're seeing his own movie. Absolutely.
Yes. The Guardians, I feel like they're less of a thing because they're so far out there. And I super appreciate that, because when they go to some crazy place, I'm like, wow, the colors are popping and all these crazy environments are happening. I'm like, so is this like the inside of a human body or something? I just love looking at that stuff.
Very Fantastic Four-y. It really brings me hope that when they do the FF, it'll be good, because that and this last Ant-Man movie where they were exploring the quantum verse or whatever had that Fantastic Four feel where like your explorers off exploring this psychedelic crazy environment. I dig that quite a bit. That's what movies can do. That's fun.
And then we had the High Evolutionary, dug that dude and his whole deal and what he was doing, and I was just like, yes, this is the dude.
Yep, we get Rocket Raccoon's origin for all the people who couldn't wrap their heads around it. It's really spelled out.
And I got a whiff of Super Metroid. I don't know if it was just me, but the decisions that have to be made at some point in that movie and things that happen, I was just like, oh man.
Warlock though was more like Adam Warlock when he first meets the High Evolutionary.
That's what I appreciated. Like, I appreciate that you don't try to blow through his entire history. They're like, it's just one thing. We're just doing this thing. There's so many characters in that movie. We're not doing a Dark Phoenix. Yeah. I'm trying to do like a whole saga in this one movie.
Yep. This ain't going to be the Infinity Watch. Not yet.
Yeah. That's what I think. Like, it's available. I mean, I don't know how you would massage that considering, you know, we did the whole Thanos thing already, but.
No, but if they want to go.
You can still do a lot of stuff.
If they want to go forth with another Guardians movie or another wave of Guardians movies with whatever cast is left available to them, let's just say it that way, then we could see an Adam Warlock who's more of a schemer, planner, a anomaly in the universe as far as in the cosmic scheme of things, and therefore can be a rogue element in some galactic grand schemes, that kind of a thing. But overall, it was big, dumb fun. It was a popcorn movie, and it was, for me, perfect for a drive-in. I had a good time just seeing it in that environment.
I think I got excited for some potential DC movies out of this movie. Oddly enough, because I'm like, we've seen guys do like one movie, and you're like, okay, that was a good movie. Then they come back for another Marvel movie, and you're like, that wasn't as good. I'm like, three movies now. I'm like, I can be pretty sure that there's going to be a level of quality here. I mean, that's a pretty good trilogy there.
All right, Andrew, did we spoil it for you?
No, I'm good. We debated going to the drive-in, but the runtime looked like it was just not going to suit us for the... Because we sit in the car, Steve. So... we don't go to the double feature place anymore. We go to the one that just shows one. And we were like, and then we're like, you know what? It's going to come to our TVs. It'd be quite nice.
Yes, it
and will. I really want to savor it because I'm very excited. They teased Charlie 27 and Martin X. And as you guys know, that's more my Guardians. So I'm really looking forward to seeing those guys on the big screen and sort of the Guardians of the Galaxy that I remember growing up.
So you know, Marvel Boy's your guy.
Yeah, it's going to fit perfect with the new Warriors segment because, you know, we're going to see Vance. yeah, I'm very, very excited for that. You know, and I like the old ones. They were great. But, you know, it's time to pass the baton and have a movie about the correct ones. For my
Starhawk.
Yeah. Ooh, which gender are they going to? Yeah, there's so many interesting questions
that no one remembers.
They're going to get answered in this movie for me that I'm very excited about.
More than you realize. All right, Andrew, let's hear more from you. What have you been reading? Anything good?
Well, we talked about some of these Star Wars one-shots for the 40th of Return of the Jedi. And longtime listeners may know there is a comic book artist I really like who I feel doesn't work as much as I would like, and that's Kyle Hotz.
For sure. I hope
I'm saying that correct. I really love his stuff. And when I saw he was one of the 9,000 artists on the Ewok book, I'm like, I'm not the biggest Ewok guy, but I am a big Kyle Hotz fan. So dial me up. So I grabbed that one. Now that has the creative decision to not have any dialogue. I don't use silent issue because, you know, they put in some sound effects here and there.
Zub, so zub.
Not really a silent issue. I like the Kyle Hotz segments, but the other stuff is fun. It's a real mix of art styles and stories, and the ideas are all telling stories. And so when the Kyle Hotz, it's a real grim segment, and it ends with the Ewok telling it, being remonstrated for saying such a scary one and getting bonked on the head. But it is a weird mishmash of stuff for like kiddies. And then I guess the Kyle Hotz stuff is okay for kids, but it seems a little darker in tone and suggests grave menace. For those of you unfamiliar, he's kind of more into the horror style. So I think he did like some, I remember him, he had like The Hood on a few issues and Punisher and Ghost Rider, that kind of the dark side of Marvel in a sense.
He's very much in the vein of styles that like descend from a Bernie Wrightson and Kelly Jones, that kind
of thing. Yeah. So in this one, also the same thing, black and white and red are the color choices. So that kind of beautiful shading and detailed. So the Ewoks hunting this creature with, and all the only color is his red hood. And then kind of like, the jaws have like a red tinge to the teeth when it snaps and everything. And so that was the standout story for me. I'm fine. I actually don't mind the Ewoks, but I feel like their brand expansion was too extreme. You may recall the Star Comics line had a tie-in comic book
that went
with their cartoon. It just didn't, the cartoon didn't go anywhere for me. There were also Lucas did two TV movies about the Ewoks. I think, I don't know if I aged out of them is probably a good guess of it, or it was just an instance where sometimes some of the related Star Wars media, I feel, suffered from a lack of care. And those are, although, hey, I'm sure those TV movies are somebody's favorite, but I can't even sit through them.
They needed to give more care to their bears.
Exactly. Well, they were just, it ended up being, let's have not just the Ewoks, but they put a lot of kids in them too. So they were really pitching for a younger audience. Yeah, sure. I don't. But this is fun. Like I said, be warned. It goes a little bit quicker with the no dialogue. But if you like the art lineup, you know, look up, go through. I like Kyle Otz. It was worth it alone for the, you know, 8 pages he gives us. I got the feeling he might be a guy that just doesn't have the interest in knocking out 19 pages a month in month in, month out type of thing, which is really a shame. That's my pitch to get him to do a regular book. I don't care what it's about. I'll read it.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I also picked up the Lando one. That's a more straightforward. That's putting Lando in the situation. Empire ends. And for those of you, spoiler for Return of the Jedi, it starts with him on the inside of Jabba's coterie. And then they use a fake out with Chewbacca being supposedly captured for the bounty. So this is how they're going to get the information. It's a cutesy little story. I felt there was a lot less meat. I know we both enjoyed the interpreter droid story, Steve. I thought that was more, because you could do more. Like, yeah. Here we really know where Lando and Chewie have to get to, so I feel they limit it. Also, there's a significant, the card game for gambling in Star Wars, the most prominent one is called Sabacc, and there's a segment for that. And card game sequences in comics have never been my jam. It's one of the things that kind of underdid me with a lot of Western books, too. They always want that scene around the poker table, you know, and the tension as the gunslingers and all, none of that. I'm sure it can be done. It just never comes off for me. So that's, I guess, my challenge is to find the card game sequence in comics that is going to make me a believer.
Well, I can't help but segue from talking about outer space and Guardians of the Galaxy before, and then like Western type things, to the new Guardians book. There's 2 issues out at the time we're recording this, and the new series is written by a duo of writers, Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing.
I think Andrew knows those guys.
Who work together. Do you?
I talk about how I met them a long time ago at shows. at least one of them is local, if not both. They started out with licensed books with Penguins of Madagascar. I don't know if you ever know that cartoon.
Yeah.
They did they had some indie books too. And then they did
something with Boom and of things.
Valiant.
They had their own titles. And then I know we recently, I think, reviewed their Captain America book, Steve. I think all of us read the first one and I bailed after issue one, but I think might have stayed.
It wasn't the Captain America book. It was well produced, but it wasn't. I was struggling with it.
Yeah, I hear people buzzing about it still, so that's good.
It's ending, from what I understand.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Weird.
But on that, good news. They've got the Guardians book, and it's interesting. And it's intriguing, and there's a story to tell, long form, it seems, here. In the first 2 issues feature Kev Walker art. Kev, we've seen Walker draw the Guardians before, haven't we?
You know I love some Kev Walker.
And the artwork looks great here. His Gamora is awesome. His Star-Lord is fantastic, especially when you make him look like a Western character riding in out of the desert. It's awesome. And the Marco Cicchetto covers are fine as well. Kev, there's a real Firefly Serenity vibe that I'm getting from this book too. There's a this whole thing with like that being in the outer planets and using the outer planets as a metaphor for the, you know, like the frontier. And in this book, there is the United Sectors versus the White Caps having a war, which very much seemed like the Alliance versus the Brown Coats from Joss Whedon's old show.
Yeah.
It really has that vibe to me.
It definitely seems like a combination of a bunch of different Guardians things, but and like for a page or two, I'll be like, oh, is this like when Dugan was doing that thing, there was a heist? And I'm like, oh, yeah, but remember Bendis wanted to make something more like this? So I find it interesting that way, but it's I'm not going to say that it's better than those takes, but I am definitely enjoying it on a certain level.
Well, it's already going somewhere, right? Like, yeah, that was the problem with those other stories.
That's what
it
is.
They didn't seem like they were going anywhere. They seemed like they were floating around. All they were doing was splitting the team up in directions. That's what every Guardian series does. And this has them together dealing with something that's pretty... I mean, granted, there's no Rocket, right?
That's the thing.
That's coming, I'm sure.
Yeah, like, as much as, like, people are like, oh, like, there's a give and take all the time between the media and the comics, and as much as, like, people don't want that to exist or do want it to exist, you would have thought that Rocket would have been like, okay, you must have him in this book in issue one, and he's not here.
There's also no Groot on the team. And to have the two of them absent is different, but it still feels more cohesive than any of those other runs you mentioned already.
It totally does. Yeah, like they definitely have their stories. Like, we have to complete this goal, or this thing must like conclude, so you get like a good adventure in the first issue, and then the second issue, it's like, oh, then we're going to go do something else, and there's going to be this other cool stuff that's going to happen.
Yeah, the second issue really kind of was more world building, like kind of explaining a little more, and it was good. I think you're going to enjoy this book, Andrew.
You know, I did laugh in that outer space scene with the spacesuits. I'm like, the movie is more colorful than the comic.
Yeah, yeah. That's fun.
Hey, like I said, I love Charlie 27, Martin X, the whole gang. So quite excited.
What about Alita?
Meh.
She's got to be in the gold and black. All right, Kev, what do you got?
Okay, I got to get out these two free comic book day issues. And I don't know if you guys feel this way, but I always feel like the Spider-Man Venom issue is never quite as good as like the other one.
For sure.
Like Spider-Man will be like fighting a mailbox or some weird thing, and he'll be like, it'll just be some general hijinks, and you'll be like, yeah, that's all right. And then they'll segue into like some upcoming bit of an upcoming story, and you'll be like, that's the whole thing. And you'll be like, that was okay, but it doesn't really, I don't get super jazzed by that story like I do about some of the other stories in the free comic book day stuff.
Let's face it, the Avengers or X-Men book is the gold offering. And the Spider-Man Venom book is the silver offering. And then like the, you know, All the Colors of the Rainbow or Marvel Voices thing or whatever is like the bronze one.
Well, like that one has only one new story, the Voices, and the rest are the reprints in that one.
I like but that it, they put this stuff on the... They make it available digitally pretty close.
Yeah.
Because I've stopped, like, doing that. Like, I used to go grab tons of free comic books. And now I just assume, for the most part, read these things once. Like, I don't need the actual floppy of these things usually. I'm just as fine reading them digitally and then waiting for the issue. But I kind of think that Spidey and Friends one was pretty good. I like that they tell you how to read comics. It's for kids. And I got the one where Doc Ock clones all the bunny rabbits and everything. Yeah, I was like, good on them. Like, wow, that's a... I like to see that they have clear books that are safe for children.
Yeah.
Because I give away, as you guys know, a lot of comics. And sometimes it's got to be careful. Yeah, it's Spider-Man, but that doesn't mean you... A parent may want their young kid reading some of the regular 626.
Yeah.
You know, they can be pretty violent. And
why is Peter punching Mary Jane?
Yeah.
Or like the Venom story, I'm like, I didn't know how exactly I felt about it. It was just kind of weird. Like, I'm like, what is this?
I did not care. I'm in the minority, though. The fact of the Venom expanding to it's always been everywhere in the universe at all times and everything has made it less interesting to me. Although it now has this rich mythology and it's everywhere at all times and has always been in the 626 and everywhere and in the Dread Dimension and all that. I don't know. I don't need that much symbiote love.
After that Ebony God thing or whatever it was, big crossover, they needed to put Venom on the shelf for a while and they didn't.
And then I don't know if these are the first few pages of Hickman's Ultimate Invasion or. I mean, that was fine, but I made a decision not to pre-order the book. So.
Wait, you want to turn me around on when someone said Ultimate Invasion, I'm like, eh, I'm good. And then they mentioned the creative team and I'm like, okay, I'm more interested now. The pitch is exactly. Not so interesting. The team, very interesting. Okay, I'm back. I'm like, oh, I don't need, oh, wait, who's involved?
I just way to lure me in. And I looked at the pages and then I looked at their other offerings and I'm like, why? I just couldn't reconcile some of the, it's like when Dark Horse Comics had their 32-page $6 Matt Kent book beside their regular $3.99 32-page books. And I'm like, does Kent need an extra $2? Like, sometimes my brain just fizzles out and I'm like, if it was a Hickman Thunderbolts book, of course I would have bought $10 for 32 pages. Like, I mean, it's Thunderbolts.
Oh, I'm not hating. Believe me, this, if I do decide to go all in, it's going to be like the $1,000 summer or whatever the hell every 900 tie-ins I got to buy for it or whatever. But I just was saying, it's so funny that pitch, the Ultimate Universe, it's okay, but it has zero pull for me. But when you put the right names in, suddenly Andy's apparently not as staunchly against it as he was at one point.
So. Yeah, I don't even think Hitch is necessarily a huge draw that a, was like 20 years ago.
He's still solid though, man. Nothing wrong with what he's gonna put down.
No, it's just if you would have told me that, I don't know, some other guy I think is a superstar, I would have been way more jazzed. And yeah, the Uncanny Avengers one, I find it hilarious that they show the a whole, I assume is the whole team lineup, but they're not like in the issue. And I just look at that and go, Deadpool, just X that. Can we just put someone else in that slot? Like anyone else. Like you can put Maggot there for all I care. But it's kind of funny in that story. They have some dude that's like, mutants are an invasive species. And then he's like beating people up and everything. And then I'm like, looks like he's an invasive species himself.
They're a deviant invasive species.
I thought they picked some very pretty pages, though.
For sure.
The story, I was you, like, whatever. But this Joshua Cacera.
Yes.
I was like, boy, this is kind of fun. The kinetic, the fight scenes have a lot of energy. And that kind of distorted, like when someone gets hit and their jaw really gets ridiculously displaced and everything. I was like, yeah, this could be more fun. It looks like big, silly, dumb superhero fun dressed up with a pretense of multiverse or whatever nonsense they try and make it sound fancier than it is.
Well, it could be a little bleak-ish. Like with some of these previews, I'm like, I'm not sure. And then you have the whole Iron Man angle, and I'm like, And then you have the whole Hickman thing again, which I'm not sure is a preview, but I mean, it might be. And it has me more interested in the Ultimate preview. So, I mean, that's good.
Boy, did any character benefit more? I'd say even more than the Guardians. The movies really put Iron Man to the top
of
Marvel pile in a way that I don't think anybody else. I mean, I mind you, I had a subscription as a read all, but he was never the guy that he has become, supplanting. I don't know, feels sometimes like bigger than Captain America.
Well, he and Captain America were both more the Avengers book than their solo book. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Iron Man was Golden Avenger.
Yeah, and Iron Man was more about kind of cool artwork and fun armor sets and weird space armor and stealth armor. He was like the old G.I. Joes. He dressed up in different outfits.
Well, you got the mic, Andrew. Got another book?
Sure. Do you guys want to talk? I think Kevin wanted to mention about the new Avengers book.
Oh, yes.
The Jed McKay C.F. Villa one, Kevin, I hope. For all I know, there's like eight new Avenger books. So I thought this was, it's basically getting the band together and explaining why the various choices for the lineup, and a pretty solid. I don't think there's any surprises to the lineup, at least for me. Well, one surprise in her absence. I always like to have the Wasp on the Avengers.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like it's kind of her team, but I get, look, you can't have everybody, you know, there's too many Avengers, right, Kevin?
That's what we need to cover. Yeah, I'm glad to see the Vision and Scarlet Witch on the Avengers, two of my favorite Avengers, but I feel like they need a B-lister on this team, like your Triathlon or Silver Claws or, you know, someone else that, like, not necessarily like a Ghost Rider. You're like,
Vance Astro.
That's going to work. I mean, that ended up working. Like, I loved him talking with Odin and riding his car around and everything, but.
I can see that. They did not only a B-lister, but maybe some, I guess the Falcon Captain America is the street level one. Like, it's a pretty juiced up team.
Well, it's funny when she goes to recruit, like, a Captain America. And they're all like, Cap, Cap, Cap. And they're like, oh, I don't want you, Steve. I'm going to take
him. Yeah, I want someone who has a power, like can fly or do something useful to it. And
I
then
want someone I can boss around. I'm not going to take over, even if they're not the chairman.
And to tie into recent Marvel Noise segments. I mean, yes. Super recent. The big bad, they have to team up to fight. Do we spoil it, Kevin? It's not on the cover.
I'm sure they spoiled it if they showed a preview, because you want to see that double page splash of Terminus.
What a great bad guy to fight. Although, so I thought it was an exciting premise. Happy with the team, sans the Wasp. The first issue does enough, you know, gets the band together, explains why they're all there, has a little teaser for what's to come. It did make me laugh, though, when I was reading it. Because they give little capsule summaries of what's going on, which I completely approve of, by the way. Marvel, it's hard to keep track of whose continuity is in what. So I'm glad that they're like, oh, remember when you did Joe Blow event last week and this is why your continuity is this? And the guy's like, oh, yeah, it is. But now I can do this because we've acknowledged that event happened. And then they go to the next one. But reading it,
like, that's how you do that. And I feel like they also stuck something in here where they're this like, oh, if you don't know who the Avengers is, they're not really police. They're firefighters. And I'm like, I can get behind that. That's what they are.
It did make me laugh, though, when she recruits T'Challa, the Black Panther, for this and the layout they give of his backstory. I'm like, you know, he really is kind of more Marvel's Batman than anybody else with this whole, like, the extra scheming, and he has all the fail safes and has a huge amount of resources behind him and is, you know,
I have a satellite that knows how to defeat everyone.
I mean, I just like, joined your guy's team to spy on you and everything. I'm just like, wow.
Yeah, so just reading his, like, short status quo recap just gave me a real big Batman vibe, which made me kind of laugh as a fun character. But there's not, like I said, they have, you know, arguably your street level character with Captain America, Falcon, and the rest are all, you know, Thor, Scarlet Witch, Captain Marvel, all heroes that can really do a lot of physical damage. So
yeah,
glad to see, fun lineup. Maybe we'll have the Wasp as like a co-star or something. Kevin, you like the Wasp too, don't you? It can be the new Wasp. Yeah,
one of those long-standing good member of the Avengers. You know what I also like? That last page character on that last page there.
Oh, you would. Guy. I sighed a little bit. I don't need more of. There's a character they could put on the shelf, but not likely with all the business going on the TV movie side.
I don't know. I feel like people sometimes put them down and everything, and I'm just like, oh, really?
I just feel like with most things Marvel, a light, you put them in the spotlight for a while, and then you put the toy away, and that way when you take it out, I'm much more like, oh, we haven't played with this toy in a while.
I feel like they haven't shown up like a lot, like, but I don't know. I guess it's sort of like that thing where whenever the Joker shows up, it's always too soon. Oh, so if you're not into that character, I guess you always feel you're like, oh, here it, again?
I think it was 2 months ago I was at the comic shop and I said to the guy, what's DC that's not Batman and not the Joker? It's a pretty small pull list if you're not shopping in those families. Some of these guys, and like I said, no fault to the character. They're all good. It's just Marvel has a deep bench of good and bad, especially the bad. I feel like for every hero, they usually have a good 5 or 10 top rogues, so that should mean you can really rotate the baddies to be whatever, you know, and have and give everyone their chance in the sun. Heck, we just mentioned not that long ago how Stiltman had his chance to take on Thor, so, you know.
I'm sure they'll introduce some new guys, too, so.
I'm reading a book that I wasn't expecting to enjoy, and now I'm finally have gotten with the program and have drank in the Kool-Aid, and that's Miracle Man, the Silver Age,
which look at you
is 5 or 6 issues in. And I think there's gonna be like 8 or 9 of them or something, written by Neil Gaiman with art by Mark Buckingham. Comic book confession, I had never read Miracle Man. I had only perused an issue or two here or there. It took place when I was out of comics. I was out of comics from like mid 85 to the very end of 89. And so I just wasn't connected to this. And when I got back into comics, I was looking back at the stuff that I was interested in continuity wise more than I was looking for some new different property like this. And the Silver Age series is it's awesome. Not only are they finishing the unfinished story, but Bucky is redrawing like more than 3/4 of it. It's amazing. Like, I mean, Bucky has improved over the years. That was one of my kind of complaints of reading those old issues. Was it was almost like reading an old issue of Captain Canuck with some before George Freeman was on the book, when it was not as dynamic of an artist. And Bucky has, you know, become that and more over the, like in the back matter of these issues, they show comparison of like the old sequences and the redrawn sequences. And it's like, oh man, no wonder he wanted to redraw pages and add pages. And that's even before they got to the part where it's, they didn't get to finish the story and they're going to finish the story. I mean, well, this is, this is the story that they've been, you know, Joe Q promised us they would tell back when they did the whole Angela Miracle Man deal with Gaiman.
If memory serves, Steve, those were also hot. My buddy had some, but they were not easy issues to come by back in 86. Like, that was a hot book. Moore was hot. Eclipse was still an ongoing concern, but those were, I remember them being like kind of fought over issues and pretty expensive pretty quickly. Now, for people today would laugh at what we considered expensive back then, but remember, you know, this was many, many decades ago and money went further, whatever excuses we use for that. But yeah, because he had him and I was pretty jealous and I was like, but I couldn't justify spending, I don't know what it was, $20 for the issue or whatever for them, because they would instantly be hot and hard to get. Yeah, it was a fun time. I remember those issues. And Eclipse was still exciting, ongoing concern. I'm glad they got a chance to redo it. I just don't know. It always feels weird that picking something up after 30 years or so.
But it's redone. That's the thing. It feels modern because it's being done, redrawn with more modern sensibility and care. It's a great story too. I mean, the vibes that I'm getting from it, guys, are very similar to Payer and Jamal's Wrong Earth.
Oh.
Right? Because you're mixing these Silver Age sensibilities with these like modern settings and situations. The story follows Miracle Man's sidekick, who's, for lack of a better way to say it, returned after being thought lost for like decades. So we see this world and have it explained to us through his experience. And the story is really his story. I'm finally getting it. I get it. It's I'm enjoying it. And I'm looking forward to seeing them wrap it up.
Steve, coming around to Neil Gaiman and Alan Moore.
took them 20 years to do. I mean, when did this deal get done with Marvel, with Miracle Man, where they said, oh, and we're going to finish it and everything? That was 20 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah. And didn't they start to like do it? And then they said, oh, no, you're going to have to wait like a few more years or whatever.
I thought they just reprinted the old stuff.
I think they had a like an unfinished start.
I don't it was,
this is great, though.
It did. I'm glad they took their time and got it right. Although, are we not supposed to mention that Alan Moore wrote the? Didn't he want his name taken off?
Yeah, I think you're supposed to call him the OG writer.
Sorry, Alan. I do like your stuff, so you know you've gotten plenty of my money. So
I remember how I snuck that first issue of that series into an indie episode?
Why not? It's Eclipse Comics.
Exactly.
Yeah, those are not. I wonder if you can get them cheap now, though, now that it's getting reprinted.
I wouldn't say they're cheap, but I wouldn't say they're too costly. Like, it's not prohibitive for you to get them. But, you know, as the series goes on, I think the issues get a little more expensive.
Yeah, well, nowadays, I don't regularly, but it's not like I would blanch if I had to pay $20 for a comic book, so. Not quite the ask it was back in 1985.
All right, Kevin, one more time, toss to you. So if you want to try to rip through a couple of books, go for it.
All right, I got some quick follow-ups here.
Because we got some new Warriors to get to. Want to get that done.
Of course. Everyone's just waiting. They're like, oh, I can't wait till they get that with the guy, and there's going to be the other guy. Anyhow, you're going to have to wait for the guy. So I remember we talked about the first issue of The Wasp. How we were enjoying that and everything.
Yeah.
And now that the miniseries has concluded, thoroughly enjoyed the rest of it. I mean, I showed up. I mean, Whirlwind showed up, so, you know.
You have to show. It's a Wasp story. I mean,
he's always going to be tied to them ever since that awesome chase scene Avengers years ago.
And then you had the whole Cosmos business and Jarvis. And then the little surprise at the end was that Janet Van Dyne will return. So we're getting more Wasp. And I was like, yes, So I love seeing Nadia too in this
book. But not the new Avengers book.
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
She'll be the special guest chairman that comes in and takes it over from Captain Marvel.
That's what you hope for, right?
Yeah, I don't know. She is the Avengers. To a lot of us that read a lot of Avengers books, she was just a good linchpin to that team.
Hey, I mean, when someone needs a new costume, who's they going to go to?
Exactly.
When someone needs an apartment, who's going to, you know, loan them an apartment?
Someone needs to keep Jarvis in line.
Chair? Maybe? I don't know if you knew this came out, but we sung the praises of It's Jeff. So, I mean, that this just reminds me I got to pay more attention again to Marvel's digital originals there. So I guess Jeff is so popular, he came out in physical form, and I was wondering how they were going to print this out. Because I know they've done some others, and then I was like, so are they doing like one per page or whatever? So I was like flipping through it. I'm like, oh yeah, I can see where it's like different combinations of things. Like it's not just like one gag or whatever per page. Like sometimes you can fit four on a page.
Yeah.
Like if they're vertical, sometimes you can fit like three verticals on like a half page.
Yep. They had to redo each. They had to design each page.
Pretty much. Scratch. Yeah.
I don't like that they're doing the reverse and not acknowledging it still. I put it on my phone because I was checking something because my account, for long, boring reasons, forget it. And I clicked on one and I was like, boy, this seems familiar, but it's reformat. And then I'm like, wait a sec, this isn't a new story. They just took one of a good comic book and stretched it out. I don't like this.
I still don't know why they put like reprints of issues up there when the original issue is up there. But anyhow, that's a whole separate concern. The monthly event, for some reason, I don't know why, might be a movie coming out soon or something. But Spider-Man 2099, Dark Genesis. I've read one issue so far. And all I can say is that... With this creative team of Orlando and Mason, they're bringing out the 2099. Like I remember the previous series, I'm like, okay, he is definitely a fan of 2099. And sometimes that, you know, doesn't work out. Like if someone's too much of a fan, but all that 2099 goodness feels proper and like we're moving somewhere, and it feels like that world. Like after all these years. Has it been like 20 years and all these failed or weird, different 2099s? Like this is, once again, the 2099. This feels like the deal.
That's cool.
Yeah, I like that last one. This one, just having it be weekly, it's just, it's hard for me to make sure I get it every week. So I'm like, this one I may have to wait on. That weekly commitment is a lot. That's when... I'm in like heavy book buying mode for those things, but I really like that last 2099 series they cranked out.
Yeah, like usually I would complain about, but you, I guess maybe would be something that I'd be less into, or like it's Spider-Man and I'm like another Spider-Man. But I mean, for something like this, I'm like, and we're getting towards like summer. I'm like, it feels like my summer. Treat type of thing like that they used to do. I'm like, oh, like the Spider-Man bi-weeklies or something. And the last thing I have is Sins of Sinister wrapped up, and boy was that a thing. I mean, I feel like I need to like I'll read it like back to back now that it's done, because there was so much in there. And I know sometimes you go to these like alternate dimension world things. And they're like, oh, yeah, if people like it, we'll come back to it. And then they never come back to it. Like, you could totally come back to this Sinister verse thing. It just feels like there is so much in there and all these, like, untold stories. And then after, like, Sinister has, like, a revelation about himself. And then I won't say how, but we come back to, like, our time, like our world, our regular Marvel, and things are a little messed up, I think. And then, like, some of these, like, aftermath issues with, like, Immortal X-Men, characters are rather upset, I would say. Like, Storm in particular is just like, what? Like, she has to, like, save the dream, I guess you could say. There's just so much. You wouldn't. I guess there's been a lot of sitting around and talking. You're like, how can sitting around and talking be this exciting? But it is. But just this, so many consequences, so much aftermath, and so much building to, like, the next thing. It's just like, I have to decompress and, like, reread this and then see what's really going on in the background, because there's just so much happening. Such a good time.
Wow.
I know.
All right, Andrew, how about one more?
All right, this one should hit sweet spots for a lot of different people for a lot of different reasons. But it's the rebirth of Warlock Rebirth. Ron Mars, Ron Lim, Don Ho as the inker. I don't know if he was his regular inker back in the day, but we're hitting quite a few different spots of people's fondness, starting from the 70s to the 80s to the 90s to today. Maybe there's nothing
for Gamora costume. Was that actually a 90s thing?
No, that was even before, wasn't it?
Okay, because I was wondering, I'm like, that's not the costume I know.
And prominently featuring Kevin's Captain Marvel, Genis Vell.
Oh, yes. With, but not in the costume I remember.
With his weird ponytail and headgear that does not seem like it's 2023 appropriate. But lots of fun guest appearances by crazy, fun cameos of Goom, everybody's favorite Marvel monster.
I mean, it definitely is mine. Or Googam, son of Goom, also a favorite.
So basically, this is going to be, it starts out propelled by Genis Vell looking to know more about his father, which is going to send him to Earth, which is the source of all trouble and hassle. We're going to get some Adam Warlock stalwarts, Pip the Troll and Gamora. And then they're going to dust off why we can't see all the other, you know, like, hey, the Drax is busy in his continuity and blah, blah, blah. Maybe he'll be available for a cameo later.
And this is the latest, you know, it's an old school miniseries. So it's like the third, I guess, that Ron Mars has done recently, going back to the 90s. He did a Genis Vell one and he did a Silver Surfer one also, but it's as they were back in the day, right? So this is taking place during the Infinity Watch series time when they were living on Monster Island. That's why they got all the monsters there and stuff. And so Drax is somewhere, his continuity is their continuity, because this is Infinity Watch time, which is kind of neat. Because, you know, nothing's going to change too much, because we know where the story goes from there in large scope. But, you know, on the small scale, it's so fun to see everyone written in character by the guy, one of the guys who was writing them back then, and the guy who wrote the Infinity Watch series after Starlin and with Starlin's blessing. And everyone's so uncaring. Like, Genis Vell was always looking for more information about his father at that time. That was his deal, right? So it's just fun. I mean, and then there's this whole thing of there's a new her.
Yes. I laughed on the reveal. I had fun with. And Ron Lim, for me, is a Silver Surfer guy. I know he's done a lot more, but that's how I think of him. And he's still delivering the goods. I mean, come on, that was not yesterday. And he still looked just as sharp.
Yeah, I mean, admittedly, he's a friend, so I'm biased. But, you know, Starlin brought him in specifically to follow him on those books, both Surfer and the Warlock book. And he is the other guy who does those characters in the right voice, in my mind. Thanos as well. Not many do. So it was fun. And this Eve Warlock, this her, doesn't seem like it's the old her character that like became Kismet over in the Quasar book. This seems like a different character, and she takes the soul gem from Warlock. So it's going to be 90s fun.
Yeah, but done early with 90s. With more of a taste of the modern, I would say. It doesn't feel so 90s, like, you know, some people might have a negative association with the 90s. And I don't want to scare you off with that.
That's why I said early 90s.
But I love Goom. Like I said, the reveal of her, just, I don't know why it made me laugh, but it did. And that's the kind of thing I like. Like you say, it's the nice balance of new stuff with just a taste of nostalgia. And much like you had your dark period, for me, like that mid-90s, I don't know none of that. I'm not reading that stuff. So this is all kind of a fun time period. And there's always interesting, these cosmic characters that have the awareness and are kind of plugged in always have a fun way, because whatever the plot throws at them, their reactions usually work. You can either have them, they knew it all along, or it's a complete twist, and either way works. Like, it's, I think the characterizations are, when done right, fit almost any plot situation you want to plug them into.
Should be a fun ride. All right. Get a sip of water while the music plays and get ready to assume host duties, Andrew.
Certainly. I like, am wondering if this Pip the Troll can still smoke cigars, but we will prepare.
I don't think so.
Just taking a drink of water.
Blue blazes. Well,
welcome back, Marvel Noise listeners. Yes, it's a treat for your ears. We are here to present what is likely to be the final episode of our segment covering the original New Warriors title. And by we, you are in for an even bigger treat, because we lured Super Steve back. We tricked him and told him we were going to talk about Eric Larson's Nova series.
Blue blazes!
But Kevin and I, stalwarts, have marched on to present to you this, our 23rd segment, where we wrap up the title. This is it, the 72 to 75, the final blast. I think we mentioned, longtime listeners know, that this segment, a lot of these issues aren't on the Unlimited, but have faith, the announcement of additional Omnibuy, Omnibuses, Omniboo, means that they will probably be loading these issues up. My personal suggestion is wait till they're part of the Unlimited. You don't need to run these issues down. But
I would run these issues down.
Yeah, I mean, these, first of all, I thought we were going to end with the end of the original writer, Fabian Nicieza's run of New Warriors. So this all has been gravy, lumpy gravy, as it were, but gravy nonetheless. And the real behind baseball reason why I haven't been on the past two segments is I didn't have those issues. And as you said, they're not on the Unlimited. I did pick up these issues, though, because the covers were enough to grab my attention as we got back into Torpedo ROM type continuity, which is right up my alley. So I have these ones, so had to come back when we got to them.
Excellent. The segment setup is, I am new to the New Warriors, having been out of comics when they were starting and then getting back in afterwards. Kevin is the New Warriors expert, and Steve, we like to say, only reads the good issues. So we are at the turn. The 90s have turned, gentlemen. It's the backside of the 90s. Things are going to get a little grim at Marvel. But for now, we plug on our New Warriors title. Has been flip-flopped around, and it is now part of the Spider-Man family. But, sorry, I don't mean to laugh, but it just, I mean, I guess it makes sense, but it doesn't really make that much sense for me. But well, anyways.
I read a little bit of behind baseball stuff to go to that analogy twice in like 1 minute's worth of time. But I think it was an issue of Back Issue Magazine from Tomorrow's a few years ago. They covered Nova's history, and in doing so, touched upon some of this New Warriors stuff. And I guess around issue 50, they were supposed to break off into a second New Warriors title. And that's why they had that huge cast of so many characters, right? And then when, like you said, the backside of the 90s, times are getting hard. what happened was the other title didn't happen, and this had to get folded into the Spider-Man editorial world. It was it wasn't a natural move, but it just had to happen because of the economics of the thing.
And we've settled into a steady team, which has been nice. Evan Skolnick, Patrick Zercher, Andrew Peepoy. I've been really in talking up the Zercher and Peepoy. I know it's some of their early regular work.
Yeah.
But I feel like they're really paying the bills. They're putting the lines on the page. That's been the highlight of this last bit for me. No knock to Skolnick, but I'm more vibing on that aspect of the book. But as is, so we've just wrapped up the touching tribute where we found that Speedball died, but it wasn't our Speedball. It ended up being a Speedball with an alien ghost inside. So he has lost a year of time and is back with the team. But Kevin, you know what time it is. You got to tell us, who are our new Warriors?
I love Super Steve laughing because he's like, what happened last episode? I should mention, yeah, this is part of the Spider group. But Spider-Man, Scarlet Spider, none of those things are here. It's in Spider-Man title in name or in corner box only. We've excised that Spider-Man-ness for the better.
Except for except for the corner box on the cover.
Yeah, exactly. It's basically Wolverine just sitting there holding up his claws saying, this is for sales. So we have Speedball, Robbie, our bubble boy, our bouncing bundle of bubbles. Firestar, Angelica, our mutant that shoots microwaves. Not the ones you buy at the store, like microwaves. Turbo, Mickey, the human torpedo. Who sometimes wears a costume, but not so much.
Where's the other one, Kevin? Look at you already dissing her other half.
You want me to talk about the other?
Well, I mean, he's not dead yet, so we can.
Whoa, spoilers!
Bring out your dead! Bring out your dead! Oh, I'm not dead yet. Oh, you will be soon. I'm getting better. No, you're not.
So you also have Justice, Vance. Our TK guy, Powerhouse Alex, he steals his powers from his siblings to be a cool member of the New Warriors. Time Slip, Rena, she's slipping through time, sometimes sees the future or something. I'm not 100% clear what her powers are. And then sort of in the margins is Night Thrasher, Rage. Psionics, however you pronounce that thing. Hindsight Lad, I guess he's kind of New Warriors adjacent. And Helix is not a New Warrior. I'm sorry, but Helix leaves here like he was never part of the team. It's like, hey, we finally teach you some English, so now you can disappear from the book and not really be part of the team, even though one thing online says he was a team member. But He contributed to one fight. I mean, to me, Helix is not a member of this team.
He was a real net zero. I don't remember him ever being part of the team. His entire personality is he doesn't know who he is. I'm glad they got rid of him. Like, they did nothing with this character. Like,
does he ever find out who he is? Like, I really need to look him up and see if he's ever appeared again, if he ever figured anything out.
Yeah, I just, it felt like we missed an issue where they beat him up, put him in prison, and then the next thing, in their little New Warriors jail cell, next issue, he was part of the team and had a code name and all this stuff. Like, but like I said, just a real, they didn't give him hardly any pages, so he doesn't have any personality. Like, if you want a blank slate character, this is as pretty close as you're going to get to a character with no words. So I'm glad we get rid of him. But we pick up, as Kevin said, some of our original team are on the side team, the Psionics team. But with the end brewing, we can sense they're going to tie up some loose ends and pull some threads together, hopefully. That being said, 72 is a strange book. We got off this little four-part micro-series, and they do a real silly joke, a panel comic. And I thought it was weird. Kevin, how are you? Like, it's so, like, we're just going to have dumb jokes about fourth wall jokes. They have one bit of dialogue where Rob Liefeld's name is in the dialogue somehow, and... And then it's an accountant who's like, and Thor wants to deduct his hammer for his tax. Like, just weird stuff that doesn't seem to fit the tone of the book.
I don't know. I feel like this is kind of like that Speedball issue. Like, I feel like this book is back to being the New Warriors book again. Like, this is the book I enjoy.
Okay, good. I did not enjoy it. I thought the jokes were dumb. Like I said, the Rob Liefeld thing. Especially because the letter then highlights the Rob and the Lie and the Feld and the thing. And I'm like, we're not stupid. Like, you don't need to spell it out for us. But for an important plot going forward, we bring back the Mad Thinker.
You know what the really strange thing is, though?
To the team. Sure.
There's an ad in here for Van's shoes. And there's like a signature on a piece of parchment. And it says Chap. I'm like, wait. They got Chap Yap to do a Vans shoe ad? I'm confused.
Well, it looks, the character they've created looks sort of like a Night Thrasher armored guy.
Yeah.
It's a weird comic strip all the same. But this is, we've been a couple of elements. Like I said, the Mad Thinker's brought back in. He's been in Weave throughout their continuity. So it's good they're going to bring that together. Along with... Kevin really must love the humor that his android buddy brings, because that guy's always making jokes. They don't really work for me, but...
Say you don't like characters like Awesome Andy? You don't like that guy?
I like Awesome Andy. This wisecracking, hey, the mask was a pretty popular thing. Let's see if we can have a watered-down version of it doesn't do it for me.
Well, you know what it is. I think Super Steve is Primus, and you're Awesome Andy. That's what I think it is.
That could be. But that's insulting to Super Steve.
So. Insulting to the Mad Thinker. He could do better.
Hindsight Lad finally discovers that they've been being spied on from inside their base, and it's Hydra, which is demonstrated in a really cool three-quarter page splash where all these Hydra agents pop out of the thing. As I said before, the highlights for me are Zercher and Peepoy all the way around. They do fun. As Kevin said, Helix is like, hey, man, I got to go figure out who I am. I only get a few pages every issue and no one knows my identity. And so that makes Torpedo's kind of sad because she's been flirting with the fact that she never wanted to be a superhero either. She wanted to travel the world. So, wah, wah, bad for her. And Hindsight Lad is captured by this Hydra cell run by Mother of Pearl.
I had forgotten that that they resolved this, like, basement thing, sort of like a Thunderbolts thing.
Yeah. Mother of Pearl gives me strong Citizen V vibes for the design, which is cool with me. But I thought that was fine. But what I don't like is... Hindsight Lad, like, makes fun of them, and they start fighting, like, no, that plan was good. Shut up, Dave. Your dad is done.
I love that. I thought that was hilarious. It's they've been, like, trapped in this underground Hydra thing. It's sort of like the bumbling of, of the like Secret Empire enough like that. No, no, your mother, your mother's mother, your father's mother. And I was just like, yeah, this is working for me. But okay. You know this.
That's
this,
what she said.
This mother of pearl, destined for a comeback. I mean, someone's gonna if they haven't appeared since. I mean, another character in these New Warriors books, someone can mine for a comeback.
Oh yeah, a great design. Like I said, the whole silvery mask, the Citizen V vibe, and the cane and everything. Great designs all around.
And although, then they're like, "What's your plan for the world? Oh, we were gonna blow up the world, and then what were you gonna do?" This is good.
Then it turns out that Hindsight Lad has been stealing from the Avengers to finance things, so the Avengers show up to pay the bill. And let me tell you something, boys. While we're on designs, whoever decided to make Hercules look like Strong Guy needed to be fired, because it's terrible. I mean, he has like just like a muscle t-shirt and a headband. I didn't know this was Hercules.
Yeah, isn't this sort of crossing era Avengers, which has some questionable designs?
Yeah, he got depowered, remember?
Yeah.
He was like mortal for a little while.
Like Vision's fine. Black Widow always, it's a modification, but that part's cool. But man, why make Wonder Man look so, Hercules look so generic? It's terrible. Yeah. But in the interim, because Speedy has been rebooted and lost that year, he's now the link, because as everyone knows, him and Rage were buddies, so they're having their rekindling their friendship that's going to help weave the two teams back together. The Avengers and the New Warriors discover that Hindsight Lab's been kidnapped and go in, and that's when the Mother of Pearl Hydra Branch unleash their weapon. Their whole plot was to make Wall Street get super greedy and destroy the with their corrupt array. So again, it's done as like a very silly kind of
how do you
thing.
Know if the ray worked?
You're getting a good view here. Kevin loved it, I didn't, so that's a good split. I do love when the ray happens and like the perspective gets shifted and everything is kind of crazy. I did not care for the when the lights go out and it's just a bunch of sound effects and everything.
Oh, I do that all the time. Like in here, it seems like it could have been like, yeah, we only have so many pages. But also, I mean, it kind of matches the goofiness of some things in this issue. But yeah, like doing my own stuff, I'm like, I do that all the time. I'm like, I don't want to do all this fight stuff. Like that's going to waste all these pages and panels. So I'm like, yeah, just put some sound effects. It's always good when you can't draw. I mean, obviously, Zercher can draw, but I'm saying for me.
Yeah. Well, certainly, you wouldn't want a bunch of fight stuff in your superhero comic. That would really weigh it down from being a witty exchange of retorts. But generally, like I said, Zercher and Peepoy save everything. End of the day, Hydra's shipped off. The Avengers are like, no, don't worry. Just ask us instead of stealing. And that kind of clears the tablet so we can get what no doubt lured Super Steve back in, which is next they feature prominently. They're going to explain about Turbo.
Yeah.
Steve's one of Steve's top characters. Except not as Turbo. Maybe as Torpedo, but.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like, I, you know, we covered Torpedo and his ultimately sad story years ago. I'll link in the show notes to that episode, but I had just come across the Torpedo off the shelf in Daredevil, you know, when I was a single digit comic book reader age wise and then followed him when he appeared in ROM. I thought that was so cool and followed him through that, and then couldn't help but be interested to see some other writers' take on what to do with the suit and everything. And I gotta admit, it looks great on a girl, right? And certainly the Zercher Peepoy team has matured the characters somewhat, where they now have more typical superheroic anatomy, as it were. But this cover of New Warriors 73 has the original Torpedo's face on it too, like the legacy of, you know, and it's like, oh man, had to pick that up. And the drawing of Turbo is so cool. The arc that the, you know, is the underneath the form from her elbow of her punching hand all the way down to her back where her foot disappears because of the, you know, leggings of the torpedo costume. This is such a cool arc that shows the force of her punch without having to show like speed lines, just because it's such a good dynamic twist. And it's got the Rocketeers on there, the flying gunned helmeted commando gang that were always after the torpedo suit. Very cool.
Yeah, a sharp cover for sure. Steve, please tell me you didn't read the last page of the comic, the text piece from the writer.
Of course I did.
Oh no, it's too bad. Sorry, Steve. I really don't like that. Like, I'm glad they explained the backstory and why they're crediting Dwight Coy, because basically Evan Skolnick and his buddy, when they were starting at Marvel, wanted to pitch this a torpedo revival because it was a friend Dwight Coy's review. But my problem is, I hate that when he looked at it and he was like, oh, that's the stupidest thing I've ever seen, the goofiest looking costume I've ever seen. And I'm like, I really don't like the, I hate this thing, it's stupid, so let's do something with it attitude that I feel was like a 90s, like, oh, too cool for school, it's got to be extreme type of.
That's not like, just a 90s thing. Whenever I look at some character that has an interesting costume or something that someone would seem goofy, they're like, oh, we got to serious him up. A jack-o'-lantern as a head? That's kind of silly. I'm like, dude, it's superhero comics. I don't want characters in leather jackets and stuff. It's like, I want some crazy stuff. I need some bright colors.
What I got out of it was the idea that for years he's pitching this same idea over and over again, right? To do something with the torpedo suit, which ultimately gets done in the pages of New Warriors. And the only other thing that seems like it makes it is that there's two characters that share the suit, that was an idea from their original pitch.
Yes.
And from what I'm reading, the editors and editor-in-chief at the time didn't think the book was ready, not because it was necessarily flawed in its idea or to bring back torpedo and all that stuff, but the fact that these guys weren't writers.
Yeah.
Right? And then he's a writer, so he can get some of this stuff in, but then after this book ends, he goes and works at video games for the rest of his career. So the comic book writing wasn't where he, the editors had a point, I guess, he hadn't developed himself as a comic book writer and didn't really bother to, even when he had the opportunity and when the industry collapsed, he went and I think now is a collegiate professor on like writing video games or something like that. But
I mean, I think it's been fine overall, but it was just that attitude about like, oh, this is goofy looking, but I mean, you don't need to be a super fan either, you can just be a professional, but I never liked the seizing on the goofiness part.
The irony is that's the only thing that stuck was the goofy costume and their idea that maybe two people shared or whatever. All the other stuff was the stuff that was flawed. Like the thing that he thought was goofy was the coolest thing.
For sure. Especially with, as you say, putting a good art team on. And as usual, and I've remarked this before, they just fill in a lot of details, like posters and books all have titles and everything. So if you want to spend time, like he's reading a Repo Man comic, and you can really get into the fun of the Crimson Centipede and all the fun. And she has a Smashing Pumpkin shirt on. But basically, the suit is split between the two, and suddenly Dan Jones shows up.
He's a big saying man. That
my dad was Brock Jones and I want the suit back and you guys know where the suit is. He doesn't know they're them. So yes. That's going to be driving the bus on that. Meanwhile, that Mad Thinker plotline is evolving. He clues in the Psionics crew, although we're only really going to see Night Thrasher and Rage, about some details about where they can find Namorita / Chimera / Nita.
The second Dan Jones showed up at the door, not only was it just surprising to see how much older he was, although this was like, I think, 13 years since ROM 50 when Brock Jones, the original Torpedo, not the original Torpedo, the second Torpedo, died. I think it was in 83, ROM 50. But if you remember True Believers, his whole family died. So as soon as this dude shows up, I'm like, well, that makes sense that he looks like he's way older than he probably should be and looks gigantic, because there's no way in heck that can be him. That was part of the tragedy of the Torpedo. He and his whole family died. You know, in issue 49 and 50 of ROM, it's like Brandy's parents died and Steve Jackson died, and who was like the Archie to her, you know, being Veronica in the book. And the Torpedo and his whole family die in 50. It was a brutal, brutal couple of issues of ROM. But I always love when there's references to ROM, as you can tell, because it's like one of those dirty little secret things that, like, because they can't really talk about it too much, but they can on the inside of the book, but they have to be careful because they don't own the rights. And I always like that, because the continuity is so part of Marvel's history in the Bronze Age.
I can't believe they allowed, like, ROM to be drawn. Like, is this the latest we've ever seen? Like, even if it's just for one panel. Like that was something. I mean, yeah, and there's a whole reprinting thing that I'm like, yeah, oh, it's only one panel. It's okay. But I'm like, they actually drew, like, something into the issue.
I wonder if it's going to be in the Omnibus and in the Unlimited.
I'd imagine, because hasn't ROM been, like, there's that Avengers cover where ROM is like, oh, he could be an Avenger, and he's there.
Oh, okay. Cool.
So I'm sure it's fine, but it just seemed weird. Like, this might be the latest. Like, nowadays, I don't think if they were doing a flashback, they would draw in ROM for one panel.
Well, the thing that what happens is they decide that they're going to collect the info because Mickey is at the New Warriors base and is warned, hey, don't put on the suit. I'm coming over. The son of the original one wants it back. So Hindsight Lad uses this internet to look up information where they're also going to try and get information via the superhero network and Friday, the smart ship and all that. So Vance and he give a like 3-page synopsis. That's where the ROM drawing comes in. But I was a little bit bummed they didn't throw in footnotes, because some of the stuff isn't just a ROM if they don't want to do. I guess they couldn't have some, because like you said, Steve, it talks about the Daredevil beginning. Yep. And those sorts of things. This isn't all just those ROM. That's where it left off, but there are the stuff before. But yeah, footnote lists completely, which is kind
of
sad.
Because all the stuff they're talking about here, the Torpedo's history of the senator who was really like the Russian spy type of guy who was trying to have the suit made and all this stuff. It was so cool that when ROM revisited Torpedo, they retconned all that stuff to be all part of Dire Wraith's plans and machinations and stuff, which was really well done retconning and really fun to have it all presented here as, you know, that's the way it was. It seems very cohesive as it was presented here.
You think Zercher changed his mind of what Mickey was wearing? Like, she's wearing a black shirt with the Zen top over it, and then later on she's only wearing the Zen? I just thought, that's a weird... Because I actually looked, are there lines on her arm, and the colorist just forgot to color it? I'm like, no, I guess that was... It's like she invites her friends over, and then she's not wearing the shirt anyway. It seems weird. And then I noticed Speedball's cat is in the background too.
Well, at the end of that issue, the cat had been mellowed out after its explosion, so yeah. They were all buddies now.
And they had just had that workout scene too, where like if they could have just shown her in the corner working out too, that would have made sense why she would have had her, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like she was stripped down to work out.
But essentially, now we get the backstory of how these two got the outfit. They were going to a Halloween costume. They were friends. And he goes up and finds a steamer trunk that was sealed. And there was the outfit. But he decides not to wear it. He's giving it to Mickey. So he's wearing some kind of the most generic superhero costume. And I was like, they could have dressed him up as like Hulk or even Batman or something funny, you know, make it a fake one too. So that was clearly it. But because she's wearing the outfit, it triggers those rocket guys with the little fins on their head that look so fun. Very throwbacky. And they attack and she activates the suit naturally because, as we've seen, she's much better as a natural with the power suit. And trashes Bozos. Some exciting. Well, yeah, it's a good, like you say, Steve, it's a good costume and it works well with ladies and men.
Just call her Torpedo Sue.
But yeah, and so that's how they're going back and forth about it. And they're like, well, you know, let's talk to this Jones guy and see what he's up to. And that's when he's like, well, could I take it for one last run? You know, one last shot of glory. And at the time I was thinking, but if he puts the helmet on, that's also going to tell them where they are. Right. Because he was very clear not to put the helmet on. And there's a reason we find out why he doesn't want them putting the helmet on.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with that. Puts the helmet on and it's our dire Wraith Queen, which we last saw a few episodes ago, or issues, episodes as well, but issues ago, and ends with her looking really cool and demonic wearing the torpedo suit with, like, you know, 90s proportions, but also tentacles and drool and everything all over the place.
Yeah, you have some of that, like, Venom drool going on there. But you also wonder earlier on if, like, the our present Nova, not Rich Rider, you also wonder if he's, like, freaking out over something, like, if that's foreshadowing for that. Or if it's like another plot we're just never going to see.
Yeah, I was kind of letting that go because I really don't like the... He feels responsible for the her escaping. But we read those issues and it's really Rich Rider is the reason that thing escaped. So because he stopped him from stopping her. And I was like, yeah, I guess we're going to ignore that. He was the real cause that this is out there and resulted in the death of her friend. Because if Rich had let the new Nova stop the Queen, this wouldn't have happened. But I love the cover for 74.
And can I just say one other thing about the end of this in 73 with Mike here turning into the Wraith Queen, because he just told the story of how they found the suit and she didn't, Mickey didn't dispute it, so it must have been accurate. That's his memories, so that means he's dead, right? Because the Wraiths could impersonate and shapeshift into somebody, but they could also stick that little tongue thing in your brain and suck your brains out, and they actually become you, where they take your memories and everything too. So for the Queen to have had his memories, that means he's dead.
Yeah, I mean, no, to be fair, no real loss. There's another character that they just devoted very little page time to, except he kind of had the hots for her and he really wanted to be a superhero. That's his entire character arc the whole time.
He was her Caps.
Yeah.
Oh,
never Caps, well, whatever.
Hey, yeah, Caps.
Caps at least had the personality of he wore hats. But a very cool Chimera / Namorita / Nida cover for 74.
Wait,
with the new
this
Warriors
is the
logo.
Issue, the cover where, like, I remember not being exactly, like, up to date. Like, I think it was an issue behind or whatever it was. And then once I saw this cover of the 74, I'm like, oh, yeah, I got to get caught up on New Warriors. This looks like a excellent issue. I'm like, Look at that cover.
Yeah, it looks like Onslaught's coming.
Yeah,
well, he is around at this point.
I know. At the time, I was like, ooh, Onslaught. Nope.
No, really... it's the guy that walks around naked all the time. And they just strategically, like, have a shadow there. So I'm like, so he is naked?
Yeah, this is the best cover I can recall for this title. Really just, I don't know, I think playing with the logo, moving around the everything works for me. What does not work is this stupid Dunstan insert for the movie Dunstan Checks In. Yeah. I'm like, can you not? And it always makes me wonder when I read this stuff, who do they think is reading this comic book? It's like one of those super coloring things, but for little kids, and like a maze that's simple.
It's like a placemat that you would get like a Howard Johnson's, you know, to like keep your kid busy for a few minutes.
And I'm like, who is reading? Who do they think is picking up New Warriors? But
you know, there's only been one title I can think about in recent memory that's had things like this.
Squirrel Girl.
The Moon Girl and Double Dinosaur. It had like activity pages and stuff.
Yeah.
The Women of Marvel one had the Wasp cutout.
Paper dolls, right. And
everything. So there is that. It's just that this is really pitched, like Steve said, to like a 5-year-old or something.
This is an ad, not a nostalgic thing.
But and then right side to side with the ad for the Howard Johnsons, and I'm like, so are the 6-year-olds booking the Howard Johnsons? Steve? But we open up with a close up on our queen in the turbo outfit looking positively evil. And then a fun fight sequence where she is unlocking the power of the suit because, you know, she knows what this is about. And they were just fooling around with it. And she's really going to unlock it.
That was the thing of the whole torpedo suit when they retconned it in the ROM books, was that the Wraiths were making the suit to be a counter war suit. For use against the Space Knights that were wiping them out. So they were trying to get this torpedo suit so they could fight Rom, that it could be a foil for the Space Knights, something to equal them. But, you know, when you see Turbo put it on, or even Brock Jones, it's not like, you know, he could maybe hang in there for a little while with Rom, but really with the Space Knights? Well, put two and two together, it wasn't meant for humans to wear, it's meant for the Wraiths to wear. And if a Wraith finally wears it, boom, you get this crazy amalgamation.
Well, especially like a queen, like an important one.
Sure.
And she's really got the power. And then the most emotional stakes for me is she hijacks Friday, the sentient chip from Power Pack. And I was like, no, this is a character that actually had personality in a long history. Like, kill all these New Warrior duds that you want that no one knows about, but
save the control
keep Friday. Save Friday. So basically, along with this, we have the rescue operation. As I noted, the Mad Thinker clued in psionics, but for some reason, because the title is wrapping up, it's just going to be Night Thrasher and Rage who go and find her, inject her. They don't even have time to rescue the other ones. It's a very cool fight sequence. I think I don't really mind that they had to accelerate things because they're wrapping up next issue, but I wouldn't have minded a little bit more of them springing her. But I know, look, real estate is limited. We got a, you know, a big finale.
It totally was that, Andrew.
So, yeah. But while that's going on, our other crew has to go talk to the non-jerky Nova. Yes, the alien one, who's busy doing his job, unlike blaming everyone else for his problems. And he is going to be sort of their focal point, because as I indicated, he feels really bummed out about having let the queen go. Although, as I noted, if you read those issues or listen to our segment, you know, it was actually kind of Rich that let the queen go, because he wouldn't let him stop it. But basically, they're all going to be like, oh no, the queen has hijacked Forge's neutralizer. There's a remember that?
Yeah.
Kids from X-Men, Forge, whose mutant ability is to build anything.
Yeah, that's how Storm lost her powers in that Barry Windsor-Smith issue, right?
So she can supercharge it and get rid of all the superpowers on the whole planet, guys. No more superheroes. I think this is going to happen. Rather than choosing an end result that could have, might have happened, they choose this one. But I'm fine with it. They're all going to, you know, team up, because if they don't stop the queen, then everyone in the world loses their powers. And it's not worth living in a world without superpowers, someone says at some point. And I'm like, ew, that seems a little harsh. I mean, I live in a world without superpowers, and I'm doing pretty fine.
Don't they say in a world without heroes?
Yes.
I'm like, hey, you know, you don't need all these fancy superpowers, guys. But anyways, that was the...
That's a Bill James Marvel reboot where they don't have superpowers.
That was a real, like, we need to get going to 75. But really, like I said, like the art, like the cover, the... I mean, maybe not having more, because you're right. The villains that had captured Chimera, Namorita, Anita, were pretty goofy. And maybe we didn't need more of them.
I drew them.
As Steve said, are you sure you didn't draw Doomsday, Kevin?
I mean, it is the 90s. Like, kids like chains and spikes, apparently.
Kids like chains and spikes.
So that lead, this is it, guys. 75.
You like the end of the road.
With
you gotta love that Nova. It looks like Rich Rider Nova's on the cover. Like, yes, I got my powers back.
Yeah, it's certainly a bit of a...
Is that the same rooftop he's on again?
Of the cover. It is. I love that the way that the New Warriors S comes out from behind his fist. It looks like he's trying to hitch a ride. It looks like it's his thumb coming out of his fist, and he's like hitching a ride. Hey.
Tangent.
Yeah, so anyways, here we're going into our final episode. And the Mad Thinker lays out for us, which is nice of him. And at that point, he's worried that his plan isn't happening because Night Thrasher and Rage and Nita are late, but they're only 7 minutes late and show up. And I love her new outfit. Guys, what do you like? Like, it's just like a regular one-piece swimsuit some fun design. We got rid of, like, the Rage armor and all that other.
Yep.
For me, unnecessarily ornate and complicated armor. So they're making a deal with the Mad Thinker, who he's going to hook them up to help them join the fight, but they have to help him out. That'll be explained later, kids. But our existing New Warriors team, coordinating with the good Nova, are split into three little spaceship pods so we can have the couples, basically. I mean, you know, power, well, mass or whatever.
Yeah. Did you call Garth and Saul the good Nova?
Yes.
Oh, well, yeah. A lot's changed since I was last on. Yes. Okay.
I have not enjoyed their characterization of Rich Rider in this. He's really jerky. To a degree that is almost unreckoned. Like, I know he's a little rough around the edges, but they've made him full blown. Like, nothing's ever his fault. Always blaming everyone else for his problems.
Yeah, he's the nice guy, so bad.
The whole thing just strikes me as not a fun. They could have softened him a little bit. Still made him edgy and jerky, but
they were gonna. They just had to accelerate this ending.
Yeah,
I'll tell you after.
The pair-ups are fun because, you know, Mickey just wants to kill
Friday,
the woman, and that means blowing up the Wrath Queen. I don't, her name Volks or some crazy thing, the Wraith Queen. But that means blowing up Friday, and Alex is there moping because Friday's his friend. And I agree, don't blow up Friday.
Right.
Meanwhile, Speedball's just trying to get into the business of the newest member of the team, because remember, he doesn't really know her that well, so he's just hitting on her constantly and flirting with her. And then our long-standing couple in the last one, and guys, how about this, she proposes.
Yeah, I
thought that was nice, and he never actually says yes. I mean, they kiss, but you know,
she's just always the adult in the room, isn't she?
just leaving that open, guys. There's no yes coming out. I don't see a yes balloon.
I don't know if that comes up in Avengers. Like, I don't recall anymore. Like, I guess not. I mean, they solved the other issue from New Warriors, but I don't know. Some stuff falls by the wayside.
She'd had a long-standing plot line about her radiation cooking her from the insides, but I'm soft-pedaling some of the smaller storylines I don't like.
Busick and Perez can fix that.
Yeah.
So, meanwhile, we have Friday's kind of running dialogue to try and convince the Wraith Queen that, like, look, man, can't we all just get along? And she's like, dig, dag, nam it, you guys goof this up so I can't bring all my people back from limbo. Because remember, most of the Wraiths, I don't even think most of them are dead. Most of them are in limbo.
Yep.
So, I mean, some died, obviously, when they get killed. But she still has enough juice to go ahead and nuke the planet of superpowers. So Friday, fighting the alien virus, is leaking a little bit of jet fuel or whatever comic book science stuff so the sensors can reach it. And now we're going to have the big battle with the three spaceships and the Queen. But as I said, Alex is, no, don't do it. So Vance uses his TK power to get them out of the way, and they blow up Friday. Wow. And I was pretty bummed out about it because I like Friday.
That's right.
Yeah, and I didn't really know who Friday was that well at this point. So, you know.
Yeah. To Kevin, it's just a spaceship. Who cares?
Pretty much. It's just a day of the week to Kevin.
Yeah. Yeah. Who cares that the character's been in comics for, you know, 50 to 100 issues somewhere? If he hasn't read them, they don't exist.
Saturday comes after Thursday. No sweat off his back.
But the plan works. They crash her into the ground, but she's like, hey, I don't need to blow it up from space. I can blow it up right here just fine. You buffoons can't stop me. And so this is the big fight, and Rich comes out wearing the weird tentacle belt laser thing.
Why is he here? I know he needs to be here, but really, why is he here?
Yep.
I don't know. But just as when things look the darkest, you know who shows up? The three guys from Psionics. Well, actually, now they're new warriors, but, you know, and the big thing is Namorita. I don't know why she's still into Rich. Rich didn't rescue her. He stopped looking for her when he knew she was around at that end of that other issue.
Yep, so. He started dating the Skrull Queen or the Wraith Queen.
Yeah, so that part was weird. But basically, the new Nova sacrifices himself to try and stop the Queen, because he feels bad. He doesn't even throw it in Rich's face that it's really his fault that the Wraith Queen was there. But instead decides to transfer the power back to Rich. I mean, we got to get the status. Look, the title's ending. They got to get the status quo back.
Yep.
I get that.
I liked how he said it, though, that it's like for the second time, like someone's transferring the power to you, basically. Like,
Get a mini series on what goes on and Nova's story after the stuff that's brought up here? Like, if they want to do a flashback mini, like, here's another Nova flashback mini they can do.
What I thought would have been appropriate was a little flashback to Thor, and he transfers it to, like, a frog who becomes the Nova. Frog Nova, who then defends the planet from people. But anyways, we get Rich back. Hopefully, under a different team, he will be less current Rich Ridery. And Time Slip decides she's going to work on the thingamajig because, you know, she can speed up time. And when she's speeding up time, maybe she needs to read a few science books or whatever. Well,
you know, if you're working with a timer detonator, maybe being the person who speeds up time isn't the best, you know, power set to be.
Almost like, isn't it some complicated device? Like, isn't Forge pretty good at building stuff and infused with Wraith technology? It's not like it's a toaster or something, but
yeah, but I think she hooked up the stereo, so she's got.
So she basically plugs the coax into the HDMI port and the bomb blows up. But because she was able to short fuse it that way, they lose all their powers, but it's limited to their area. But Night Thrasher reminds her that, you know, some people have armor, not suits.
Yeah, and knives, you know, having knives that come out of your wrist gauntlets isn't a power.
And this is true.
in a silhouette panel, the Wraith Queen takes a mounted wrist stiletto to the brain pan, which probably does her in. I don't know.
Well, on the next panel, you see an ashes and an empty smoldering torpedo suit. So, yep.
Well, I don't know if she transformed herself and snuck off.
No, because the neutralizer neutralizer took away her ability to shapeshift.
Oh, that's right. Although she had whatever the powers the suit gave her. But they find that most of them conveniently find their powers returning. Slowly. Except for maybe time slip. Because, yeah. You know.
She didn't know what they were in the first place.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, it might be back. It might not be. It might be partial. I don't know.
She nor the reader really had a full grasp on what was going on. But, yeah. We have our couple back. Blue Blazes wins her heart, even though he left her to rot in some weird undertow prison. And Mickey's deciding, you know, she has to honor the legacy and become a superhero.
All right. Looking forward to more adventures of Turbo.
For she sure. needs help from a loser, so she looks to Carlton, and he says, I'm your loser, baby. And Alex realizes maybe you should stop stealing all the powers from his brothers and sister. So he decides that he's going to go figure out his own business. But as he's about to destroy the neutralizer, Night Thrasher stops him because that's what the Mad Thinker needed. He caused an accident that hurt someone close to him whose powers were out of control, and the neutralizer will be able to fix their powers. And I thought that was a fine through line because we had seen the Mad Thinker way back when.
And I'm pretty confident that after he does that, the Mad Thinker wouldn't then attach it to a satellite and put it up into outer space and neutralize all the powers of every superhuman on Earth or anything like that, would he?
Well, is his mental power a superpower? Like, would he then be like a regular guy? Would he be like
he would
regular
just be a
thinker,
not the Mad Thinker?
You know, maybe he'd lose some of his brain geniuses.
Funny.
But Dwayne and Nova shake hands, and they're going to come back. So then we have a full-on giant panel of loads of people maybe back in the team. But it's so funny that, like, all the women are drawn as supporting the guys. Like, they're all behind the men with their hand on their shoulders and everything. Like, yeah, don't forget, this is a guy's team, and the chicks are there as backup. Like, even Mickey should be in front of Carlton, right? Like, isn't she the one that's good with the suit? But anyways, that part made me laugh a little bit. And that's our ending, although I had forgotten how truly enormous Rage was. He's the size of eight people standing next to each other or whatever.
Well, he's a scrawny kid otherwise.
Yeah, he's a regular Shazam. So that's how we end it, folks. Back to the status quo is pretty much back to where it's at. I mean, you know.
Name Marita's blue.
Yeah. Let's see if people remember.
Rage is now a new warrior and not with the Avengers. I mean, there's a few, but we have our characters are mostly powered, mostly the same people, that sort of thing.
No one lost a finger, right?
So, Brevoort, with sales going bad on both the Nova title and New Warriors, both looking like at least Nova was going to be canceled. Brevoort wanted a new Nova, and the writer artist Chris Marinin didn't, so he left the book, and they were going to do an Asian American character as the new Nova. I wonder if his name would have been Sam, but anyway, and Rich was going to be his mentor, injured in a wheelchair, which would have brought him down to Earth, at least a little closer to Earth. But the title got canceled, so they decided to shift that new Nova thing onto Garth and Sal, who Brevoort knew from the Avengers appearances, and he'd always been a bad guy, and he kind of wanted to give him a redeeming storyline, so they wanted to make him the new Nova. So they kind of accelerated that piece, and that's why we got Garth and Saul being the new Nova and shifted it over into the New Warriors book and got Evan Skolnick to write. I think he was already writing New Warriors, and they got him to write those last few Nova issues as well. So what they were going to do, though, if they didn't know 75 was going to be the end of the book originally, and 75 wasn't going to be Rich getting his power back. Instead, it was going to be Rich becoming a space knight. And he, you know, gets to be powered again, which his ego wanted. But he can't, you know, he's all the trappings of the space knight, right? Like his fingers are fused and he's lost his humanity. He's a cyborg. So he wrestles with that. And that was going to be his punk, arrogant character fix treatment. Was his time as a cyborg, because eventually he was going to become Nova again. They had that figured out, but it wasn't going to. And when they knew 75 was the end, they just accelerated it all with the Wraith Queen and everything, and that's why it really did feel as rushed as it was there. And then there was going to be the whole thing of the Xandarian, you know, conspiracy going on, and there was going to be a big cosmic battle between like the Xandarians and the Kymellians and the Skrulls and the Galadorians, and it was going to be like everything related to the Warriors and a big cosmic storyline, and they never got to do that.
But yeah, it's a shame.
Kind of wild.
Space Knight would have been cool. The mentor in a wheelchair, I feel like we don't need. Do we need that again?
Yeah.
It feels like that's right. A comic book staple that.
It's just weird that Nova and Green Lantern both have a, oh, there's only one, period, like right. In the 90s. And I'm like, dude, you have a core. Like, no one has to give it up for someone else to take over. Like, you can have multiple people. But anyhow.
Well, it's what you do with any, you know, if you tell stories long enough about any agent that has a big supporting organization behind it, eventually the agent has to be, like, the only one or on his own, whether it's James Bond or the Mission Impossible dude or whatever else. They always do the, now he doesn't have any of his supports and he's on his own and he's the only one or he's the last one, or, you know, they even did that with the Watcher in the end of the Slot FF book, right, and made him the only Watcher now and that kind of stuff. It's kind of, and eventually they'll rebuild the core, right? It always happens. It's just a cycle.
I mean, I still like my idea of Nova Frog. But
for sure, with the rocket tongue.
Yeah. Yeah, they could have some fun with it. I mean, the Distinguished Competition had a squirrel as a Green Lantern, so.
I just thought it was neat, the idea of getting more into how much more into the ROM mythos they were about to go, you know?
Yeah.
The Space Knights were a fun concept because they were. Once they got untethered from the toy, it opened up the design elements that made them a lot of fun. I mean, ROM's a great design, but, you know, you're rooted to the toy. And then once they were like, well, we're making a whole bunch of these guys, and we'll make them all different kind of shiny. They were like the Metal Men in colors or whatever, but with cool kind of somewhat anachronistic meet spaceman design. Yeah, like Space Knights are fun.
And it was like, I think it was ROM 12 when they started having the backup tales of the Space Knights, where they had the backup feature and told Space Knight stories, because, you know, they were out there doing stuff. It was fun. Fun content.
Also, much better than those Raptors they came up with in that cosmic story.
Yep.
Well, I like the sacrifice nature, too.
For sure.
That they always made it a big deal, that it was not a real great deal for everyone. Like,
it's beta ray bills.
Giving up a lot,
you know,
to become a space knight. So it wasn't just party time. It seems like some of that stuff, like Nova Corps, Green Lantern, like, it's, yeah, you got a job, but it's still a big party. Like, you're not stuck in your dumb robot body forever.
You don't look like a horse head like Beta Ray Bill.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he made it look cool.
Sure does.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I I've enjoyed the new Warriors. I think that for me, those last issues highlight was the artwork. It's fun. It's an exciting team. The cast is really huge. And that's something maybe I don't know that I would have guessed from beforehand. I mean, they really could have staffed like three books at one point, I feel like.
Well, that's where they were going, right? And they wasn't creatively. That's what the book was trying to do, was trying to build.
Kevin, your thoughts on New Warriors? 75 issues plus annuals, tie-ins, sister issues.
I mean, I'm glad it came back around again when with us wrapping it up, because there was some questionable rough issues that we did in the last few segments, but you know, I'm like, I mean, I guess it's sort of like Thunderbolts a bit in that way. Like, you go through any title that goes a certain length of time, it's like you get those weird issues, right? So, I mean, I enjoyed these last few more than some other issues we've done in recent memory, that's for sure.
So wait, you're saying the ones that tie directly into the Clone Saga weren't your favorite issues, Kevin?
Yeah, shocking, right?
So all along, even before this book started, before the New Warriors book started, Eric Larson had a pitch for a Nova book. And then when the New Warriors got greenlit, his pitch was put off, and actually shortly after it was offered to him to, well, you could do it as a limited series, and he said, no, I want to do it as an ongoing. So he waited and waited and waited and waited and waited and waited and waited. And the next time that we see these characters, it's in a new Nova number one ongoing written by Eric Larson.
Yeah.
Makes me want to read that book now, because I, like these last issues of this title, I only read that stuff once and then, you know, bagged it and put it in a box in the bunker.
Yeah, I sort of had a similar journey. But now knowing what I know now, I want to see how it links up or doesn't work. Because I know there's a Sphinx in there, so I feel like I have more invested to read it now to see how, for a second time, how it's going to work now.
And there's Nebula. And we're like the world's, you know, foremost authorities on knowing Nebula stuff after a few episodes ago. So, you know, this stuff would be fun to revisit. Let's do it. But not right now.
That would be a long segment, Stephen. I haven't actually read those issues, so... Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see what we cook up next for long-term segments. We've had a few long. This isn't going to match the Thunderbolts, but it's pretty long. Maybe if the fans demand it and you can convince Kevin to pick up the mantle and follow the new adventures of the new Warriors, Marvel Now, or whatever they're calling it.
No, there's one more series before some of that stuff.
The one that had the Wizard Zero.
Yeah.
Issue.
Yes.
I think that might be the only one I have, Kevin.
if that tells you anything. I don't know if we're ever going to get it, but I remember saying, yes, New Warriors is back. And, like, what did it go with, like 10 issues? But I remember buying every one and going, this isn't that great. And I was, like, going to stick around for, like, maybe a year, I'm going to say. And then I'm like, this isn't turning around. Like, I was going to bail, but it got canceled before I could bail, so
your commitment lasted longer than their commitment,
but... Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's make that an episode for sure. Well, this an episode for sure. All right, until Kevin bails, make mine Marvel. Later.
He's a sulky, over bumpy, kinda hunky superhero. Hot to fisted and electrically transistored superhero. And exotically neurotic
and aquatic superhero.
The Marvel superheroes have arrived.
Dingin' real, swingin' shield, clingin' superhero. They're the latest.